I just thought of another poem I was going to read you. However, I'm going to read this one and call it an evening. This is the last one. This is my third try at this subject for a poem. Am I doing that? No. I tried three times to write a poem about Mrs. Lott, or, as she is called, Lott's wife. She's never given any other name but Lott's wife. And it wasn't until I let her speak in what seemed to me her own voice that I got something that I was satisfied with. And Lott's wife, after the destruction, or during it, of Sodom and Gomorrah, looked back as this family was saved, Lot and his wife and their children. As they were fleeing the destruction, she looked back. And because she looked back, she was turned to a pillar of salt. And what does that mean, that wonderful image of being turned to a pillar of salt? When I let Mrs. Lott speak in the poem, although this terrible pun was not in my mind at that time, she did turn into a sort of salty character, I have to admit, as she spoke. And it did occur to me that in her humanity, she is the salt of the earth, but I didn't use that in the poem. Now, the old interpretation of the reason for the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah by God is because they were so full of homosexuality. And there is a later, more modern interpretation that the reason they were destroyed is because they failed, except for Lot and his family, in offering hospitality to the stranger, which is a Greek virtue, more of a Greek virtue. But I am using the old interpretation for the sake of this poem. And that is what Mrs. Lott is talking about as she begins to speak. The cities of the plain. Their sex life was their own business, I thought, and took some of the pressure off women, who were treated most of the time as merely a man's way of producing another man. And there were plenty of the other kind. The two older girls got married when they wanted to. The riot in front of our house that evening, when a gang of young queers, all drunk and horny, threatened to break in, yelling for the two strangers, our guests, handsome as angels, to come out and have some fun, was not intelligently handled by my husband, to say the least. An uptight man, he got so frightened he opened the door and offered to send out our youngest girls if they'd quiet down and leave us alone. Two little virgins, he told them. Now, fellows, wouldn't that be nicer and more fun? That made them wild, and they would have dragged him out and mounted him in the street if our guests hadn't managed to get the door shut. The two strangers, it turned out, were inspectors. Don't ask me why, for the sake of a perfect idea of love or of human community, all the innocent-eyed babies and beasts and birds, all growth, both food and flower, two whole cities their innocent bouquets of persons, frivolous, severe, rollicking, wry, witty, plain, lusty, provident, every single miracle of life on the whole plane should be exploded to ashes. I looked back, and that's what I saw. Nobody knows my name. My husband and our two adolescents kept their faces turned to the future, fled to the future. Sarah, everyone knows, whose life past menopause into the withered 90s was one long obsessed attempt to get pregnant, to establish the future. As for me, I lost all sense of human possibility when the cloud rose up like a blossom over all that death. I stood for nameless women whose sense of loss is not statistical, stood for a while, then vanished. Men are always being turned to stone by something and loom through the ages in some stony sense of things they were shocked into. I was not easily shocked, but that punishment was blasphemous, impiety to the world as it is, things as they are. I turned to pure mourning, which ends the personal life, then quietly comes to its own end. Each time the clouds came and it rained, salt tears flowed from my whole being. And when that testimony was over, grass began to grow on the plain. Thank you very much.